All right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and as always, I'm joined by my brother, Barney. How you doing, Barney? How's things?
Yeah, good. I'm physically dead. I played football for the first time in like...
Hey, here we go.
I was trying to work out. I think it's been over 2 years.
Wow. Talk to me. Yeah. How did it go?
It was a nice group actually. They needed an extra player, so I was filling in. Slightly older guys, but that definitely played into my favour because after 10 minutes my legs were gone. I started off brightly, yeah, making some good passes, nice touches, and then my legs were gone. And I was just drifting. I feel like I'm quite good at finding space, Albert. So I was finding myself playing up front quite a lot, finding the areas, getting the ball, and then, like I said, my legs were gone after 10, so my shots were just all over, so messy. And then, yeah, there was a 70-year-old playing who had more legs than me. Let's just say that. So, but no, I was happy. Still got a decent touch. I found a good passes, but yeah, shooting boots went on last night. Let's say
class is permanent, mate. It never leaves you. It never leaves you. Well, I was playing football as well at the weekend. So, I mean, let's just know I play football most weekends. But something funny happened on Sunday when I played, which was that the way me and the group do it is that we organise the teams in advance. We know who's coming in advance, so everything's sorted. What happened on Sunday, something that occasionally happens, is that somebody didn't turn up. I didn't explain why, so we just randomly had one team with less player, which kind of made the game a bit less fun. But then about 20 minutes in, someone turned up who was obviously playing on the pitch an hour later, like they'd booked the next slot, but they were just really early and he was kind of just wandering around. So I quickly went over to him and I just said to him, "Look, mate, we've got a gap. Do you want to play with us and just fill in?" And I regretted it. The moment he said yes, unzipped his coat to reveal the full Porto training kit, the figure hugging leggings, not the, you know, the jogging bottoms, those kind of, but the tight sports ones. And then this is something that you don't get in England and you only get in Portugal, Barney, the vest, the training vest, not a t-shirt. And mate, the guy was cheeky conscious out. It may well have been because he was unreal. He was like by far the best player on the pitch and he absolutely ripped us apart. And I was just there thinking, you know what, this really does give an idea of the standard of football between Portugal and England, because your average Sunday footballer from Portugal is like this guy, you know, with the full gear, all the skills. He was brilliant. So, I did say to him afterwards about, you know, being a Porto fan and stuff. He was a lovely guy, but he's never playing again because he's. But look, shall we crack on? Because there's plenty of football to talk about this week. We're going to cover some of the best games from this weekend, including all the action from the big three, Braga, and a couple of extra games from the weekend that caught our eye. Before we get stuck in, just as usual, a reminder that if you enjoy listening to the podcast and you want to support us, you want to do us a little favor, you can do so in a number of ways. You could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you're an Apple user. You could leave a star rating on Spotify, if you're listening on Spotify. As we always say, a great way to show some support is simply to share the podcast with any friends or relatives that you think might enjoy listening to the show or sharing the show on your social media. And lastly, if you really want to give us a big helping hand and get involved with the show in a big way, maybe you've been a listener for a long time and you want to take the next step, you can become a Long Ball Football socio for £1 a month on Patreon. And that gets you such benefits as access to our weekly predictions league, which is really hotting up and is a lot of fun every week. You get access to our monthly watch-alongs, which we did last week for Gil Vicente versus Gidi Shavs, which was a really fun watch-along. Plenty of good chat with some of our socios. And best of all, I think you get a weekly bonus pod previewing all the upcoming weekend's action. So for £1 a month, it's a great way to show us some support, but getting some benefits back at the same time. So definitely check that out if you're interested. And a link to that will be in the description of this podcast. But let's not waste any more time. Let's get stuck into it and start, as we always do, at the very top of the table because it was another very dominant performance from league leaders Sporting, who hit Boavista for six at the Estadio José Alvalade. It was actually Boavista that went 1-0 up after 3 minutes in the game, and it did make for a bit of a tense first half where we started to wonder whether this would be a game in which Sporting came unstuck. But a late first half goal from Vitor Jocres settled the nerves, and a whirlwind second half where Sporting scored five goals and blew away Boavista meant that the game ended 6-1 and Sporting maintained their position at the top of the table.
Yeah, it was a very dominant display from off that, in that second half. I think the Jocres goal at the end of the first half really did help with that, and as you said, like sort of settled the nerves. And he obviously went on to have an incredible game once again. I think it's been interesting because we've obviously talked about him an awful lot, and I'm sure you're like me and we're struggling to find the words to describe him and the impact he's made in his debut season in Portugal. It's just what's becoming more and more interesting is seeing the wider football community discussing him more as and very much through the lens of, oh, will he be at my club next season? And, what could he bring to the Premier League, et cetera, et cetera. Which is all very valid because he's certainly got the ability to play at any level, in my opinion. I think that is a really, I think it's a really interesting question though, because I do feel like Sporting are in a strong position to keep him next season because he's obviously got the 100 million euro buyout clause, which very few clubs will be able to afford, and we're seeing that more and more in England, particularly with the financial fair play rules really biting some clubs. So there is a possibility that he might stay in, and it might not be that someone in the market for a player for that in that region. And might just be a question whether he wants that move or not. If he thinks he's warranted a step up in career, or whether Sporting can sort of say to him, look, we've got the Champions League to play in, I guess what I'm trying to say is maybe I'm trying to heap a whole lot of importance on the fact of Sporting winning the league and being able to keep Jokeres. And which is interesting because he's very much vital to that. Although, no, vital is not the word because there are other players who excelled this season. But he well, maybe vital is the word because he has completely transformed that attack. And then the players like Paulinho, who I saw the statistic that the players to have played less than 1,000 minutes this season in Europe's top leagues, Paulinho has the highest goals and assists return,
That's great.
which is like, and that goal and assist return, by the way, is something that he sort of struggled to do all of last season, and to see that change, that effect, and like the how Paulinho has been transformed into a really key and useful player for Sporting this season, and not just in the league but in Europe as well. It just yeah, I just think. And as I was saying at the beginning, the Jokeres impact and his story at Sporting is going to be so interesting. But I also think that he's the sort of the master of his own destiny because if Sporting win the league, get into the Champions League again, I think there's a real chance he stays and to try and really build a legacy. Let's be honest, because his numbers are ridiculous.
I think, do you know what, the only thing that would work against him in that sense is if he was to perhaps achieve everything in his first season, not only to win the league, but we know that Sporting could also win the Taça de Portugal, which would be a historic double for them. And I feel like if something like that happens, it's perhaps a poison chalice because they get the benefits of having a great player in the side, but then I think there's less for him to hang around for. Then, maybe if there was a sense of unfinished business, he'd be more inclined to hang around. I think personally, I think he will be leaving at the end of the season. But I think it's a win-win situation for Sporting because if he stays, then they hold on to a wonderful player. And if he leaves, they'll get a really, really impressive transfer fee, which will help set them up for seasons to come. And of course, there's no point us discussing future transfer windows now, but it will be about how can they reinvest that money and make sure they sign the right players? Because they found Vitor Jokeres once. Maybe they can find similar players again to make a similar impact. But like you said, it's not just one player who's making the difference. We had a lot of different goal scorers. I thought Francisco Trincão was once again really good in this game, and it was a shame that he had to go off injured. And actually, he then pulled out of the Portugal national team as well as a result of the injury, which was a bit of a shame because he's an excellent. I thought he was the best player in the first half. I thought he looked like Sporting's best player in the first half. But completely, I agree with you about Paulinho. You know, they both got two goals in the game, Gyökeres and Paulinho. It reminded me, Barney, do you remember at the beginning of the season we were discussing multiple times about them forming a bit of a partnership and about how Paulinho not having the burden of being the talismanic striker, the one they were relying on, was actually freeing him up, and he was playing some of the best football that he played at Sporting. I think we're seeing that again. I think for me, the takeaway from this game was that not only was it a win, not only was it an important 3 points in terms of the title race, but for me with Sporting at the moment, it's all about the performances. And it's about what the performances say to their rivals, because this win not only says to Benfica that, you know, we're staying at the top of the table, it's saying that it's going to take an awful lot for any team, including you, to overtake us. And I think it does put them in a really, really good position.
Yeah, I think just to elaborate a bit more on the Gyökeres and Paulinho combination, because every time they've played together, they've clicked and it's looked great. But I think when them two are playing together, it's important to have a player like Nuno Santos in the fullback position to sort of be that person to get forward and create those overlaps. And I was just thinking a bit more about the fullback positions in Amorim and this season, but seeing that, like, because first of all, I think perhaps we haven't praise the evolution of Nuno Santos into a fullback, because that has been, think of Nuno Mendes and that title winning team and how important he was, and then to have molded Nuno Santos into such an effective player at that fullback position, but whilst also, you know, knowing you're sacrificing a little bit of defensive solidity, which is why you rely on the wide centre backs, and also looking at Jenny Catamon on the other side and seeing the similar progression, sort of that his development to a fullback. I was just trying to compare it to other managers who play five at the back and who we've seen, and for me, I was thinking about Conte in the Premier League, or I just can't think of another one. Perhaps Xabi Alonso is doing it now at Leverkusen, but a manager who plays with the five at the back but literally is just playing with the most attacking fullbacks you can imagine, and being that brave to sort of sacrifice, as I mentioned, that defensive stability that you might get from a more defensively sound fullback. It's really interesting. Perhaps I don't fully appreciate how impressive that is from Amorim, and how bold it is. And just to go a little bit further, sorry, Albert, you were obviously talking about the statement that these wins are having with Sporting, and I think I completely agree with you. I think that's vitally important. But we've also got to look at the fact that, you know, Marcus Edwards is out injured, Trincão's out injured. They've had a few injuries this season, maybe not as much as others, but, you know, they're still able to pull out results like this, and then they're still able to have players. And like the fullback positions, the flexibility to move players around the sort of the wide areas and the attacking positions, and have people come in and perform like Paulinho. It's just, yeah, it's all so good. And what could have been a really tricky game had, you know, they perhaps gone in at half time at 1-0 down, turned into just another statement win.
And just quickly, Barney, obviously Bovista went 1-0 up inside 3 minutes, dream start. And a good goal, because you know they started brightly, and I'm sure that would have been the message from the manager before the game to have a bright start and getting sporting spaces, and it paid off, and it was a good finish from Bakuta, but ultimately it unraveled in the second half. Anything you think they could have done differently, or anything that you think perhaps could have gone better in their favour to not concede six goals?
Well, I think Abascal coming off injured for it was a bit of a loss in the back line, and they brought in
True.
Ibrahima Camara, who's more of a defensive midfielder.
Got
And
ripped apart for one of Gyökeres' goals.
well, you know, it just highlights the frailty, the thinness of the squad. You know, the options they have defensively. No, this was always going to be a hard game, I think. Yeah, it's I just every time I look at that Bovista 11, isn't it? And isn't it strange, because a few months ago, it was a very similar 11, and I was just thinking how good they were, but it's just so different now, isn't it? And yeah, it was a tough night for them, but I think, as we've talked about so many times, the lack of depth, the availability, and particularly in the defensive positions, is really costing this season. And yeah, what more can you say? I don't know, but do you feel bad? Because I feel like we've gone from talking about Bovista so often to now just sort of almost palming them off and sort of just saying, they're in trouble, they've got a thin squad. I can't really see much. I don't know. It would be interesting to see how close they get drawn into the relegation scrap if they do. But there's been ever since Petit left, I've just seen no character from that team. It's been a real change, and there's so much negativity here, as there would be with the situation there.
I think Boavista are just a perfect example of how it doesn't just take a team of talented players to succeed, because they have got talented players that started this game and that had done well at the beginning of the season. But unfortunately, I think off the field issues and managerial instability and all that kind of stuff is counted against them. And if you're not a stable team off the pitch, it will catch up with you. And regarding the relegation battle, well, they're 5 points above the relegation zone at the moment, and if they keep playing like that, they could definitely get sucked into it if they're not careful. But let's move on and talk about another game, because things were a little bit less straightforward for Sporting's title rivals Benfica, who had to work hard for a 1-0 win away at Casapia. Roger Smith fielded a strong starting 11 after rotating players in the league for the last couple of games. And whilst their lack of goals, which perhaps made things a bit more nervy than they needed to be, it was generally a good performance for Benfica, who got the winner through substitute Artur Cabral. He was on the bench as Schmidt opted to start with Marcos Leonardo up front. But I thought, Barney, that when he came on, he looked like one of the best players on the pitch and showed for me why, at this point, I think Artur Cabral should be starting for Benfica.
But I think he came on with the instructions for Schmidt to play a bit more freer than Marcus Leonardo had perhaps been told to play in the first side. Leonardo is very central, but when Cabral came on, he was finding space, in between the fullback and the centre back, making some better runs, creating more space. And so that really did help them because, yeah, Casapia looks to be back to their old best, with their five at the back, all the centre backs very playing very well, making it very hard for Benfica to break down. I did want to talk about a player who wasn't even in the squad for Benfica in this game, in Koshu, because he's been in the headlines a lot this week with his an interview he did with the Dutch press, where he basically said he felt undervalued at Benfica, and I'm paraphrasing, but sort of promises were made about his profile, and essentially, I think it was just complaining about the role he's been playing in, which is obviously something we've talked about several times this season. The fact that Schmidt's playing him in this sort of double pivot role rather than as a more free number 10 who's more licensed to get up. I think you could say you can see a player who's sort of maybe bogged down in his defensive duties and maybe not able to express himself as much as he wants. There's lots of different things to this for me, Albert. One thing was I read an opinion piece on Ebola where they were basically saying if a player like Di Maria had come out and given this interview, it would be a completely different situation. But the reason for that is because Di Maria is a World Cup winner, Champions League winner, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Benfica legend.
Of course, whereas Koshu is this player who's yet to prove himself, you could say. Now, I would rebuttal that by saying, how is he able to prove himself when he's sort of being played out of position, if you were? And Di Maria is interesting in this whole discussion as well, because Koshu arrives, gets a number 10 shirt at the very beginning of the summer, and you would be forgiven to thinking that he is going to be the star signing that summer, and then they signed World Cup winner Di Maria, and it's like, he comes along. Now, look, Di Maria has been incredible. His numbers this season are great in terms of progressive passes, or you know, chances created, all those sort of statistics. Di Maria is head and shoulders above Koshu, but compared to the rest of the Benfica team, Koshu is quite a vital player in terms of creating and through balls and making things happen. And that was always a thing that they wanted to bring back into the team with the departure of Enzo Fernandez. But in this game, as we saw with Casapia, with no Kosher in the team, no Kosher on the bench, we see Di Maria playing the full 90 once again, and he's done that so many times this season. But that for me just highlights the importance of Di Maria when there's not a player like Kosher in the team. They need that player to create, to make stuff happen. And I do think perhaps it was wrong for Koshu to come out and say that, but I also think that there's a point in it, and the fact that he was signed for a reason, and I'm not sure necessarily Schmidt has played him exactly how he should be. And there's a player in there, when you take out João Mário, when you take out Rafa, you know, I could imagine Koshu playing in one of these forward positions and really excelling, but he just hasn't really been given the chance this season.
Well, I think that there's two sides to this, isn't there? There's one, which is that I think he was wrong to say it publicly, because I think he's really disrespected the club and the manager, I do think. And I think actually he's put his future at Benfica at real risk. And I think it's put, Benfica in a real difficult position, because they wouldn't have wanted to exclude him from this game. He's a player that they want to use. But I do think that what he said was pretty unacceptable as a player, to come out in a public interview and to say, look, this move isn't what I expected it to be. I've not been given the role that I expected, and I haven't been made to feel important by either the club or the manager. It's one of your own players publicly making the club look bad, and I don't think that's a good thing for a player to do. The other side of it is the fact that I agree with what he said, that what he said is not wrong. And I think you're right to point that out, which is, I thought as well that he would be a bigger deal at Benfica than he has been, both in terms of the impact that he's got on the pitch, and how much he's kind of importance is placed on him by the manager. We have seen him be a little bit dispensable, a little bit. I mean, the fact remains he's played most games and he's started most games. But he has been moved around, and he has been used a little bit as a utility player. And he has basically, in a lot of games, been asked to do a job, which is not, when you're a team star signing, not what you expect. You kind of expect to play, be played in your best position. Presumably, that's why the club signs you. And I do agree that that hasn't happened. I think the comparison with Di Maria is an interesting one. You're right to say that. With only Di Maria on the pitch, although Rafa was on the pitch, David Neres was on the pitch, these are all creative players. Without Poch, they do lose a creative spark. But there's no reason why those two players couldn't have coexisted. And in fact, there's no reason why Angel Di Maria signing couldn't have been a great thing for Poch, because that's another world-class player that he's got to play with and to provide creativity for. Perhaps it rubbed him up the wrong way, because maybe he did want to be the main man, although I think that probably would have been a little bit foolish, because there were, like I said, I named a couple of them: Rafa, David Neres, Antonio Silva, Nicolas Otamendi, other big players at that club already, for whom he's not going to completely steal the limelight from. So yeah, I mean, I definitely don't actually disagree with what he said. I think a lot of people would think that, but I totally think that it was not an acceptable thing to say as a player for the team, about the team that you currently play for, that you are who you are contracted for to, and who now are in a really, really difficult position. And I think hopefully what all that happens is he apologizes, and they move on, which I think would be the next step. And the thing I would say to Kotchu is that he wouldn't be the first big player to come to Portugal and need time to adapt. I think that is perhaps a misconception sometimes, that I know the Portuguese league isn't the strongest league in Europe, but that doesn't mean you're just going to walk in to one of the biggest clubs and instantly everything is going to click. That said, I think there are players who he could have looked at and said, okay, it didn't click for them straight away, but it did eventually, and things really turned out well. Just off the top of my head, I think Darwin Nunez probably fits into that category. Maybe he was looking at Enzo Fernandez, who 6 months later was moving for hundreds of millions of pounds. But things happen differently with every player, and I think it was a bad call to say that when he did. I think the best thing to do would have been to have that honest conversation with the manager behind closed doors, and work together to make sure that you know they move on, and his concerns are addressed, and that he can continue to settle into the team. Because you know, like you said, they missed him.
Well, I mean, in terms of timing, like you said, this is terrible timing. Once again, it's another negative thing to come out of Benfica when they've just been talking about Sporting and sort of all the positivity around them. So yeah, it doesn't help like that. I think Schmidt's come back and said, look, players need to do their talking on the pitch, and maybe yeah, we'll see if he gets back in that squad. I'm sure we will see him again, hopefully. But then, we are now going to see Florentino come back and down at field, which is something I've wanted to see for a little while. I saw a statistic actually, which was it was comparing, well, João Neves is one of the highest players in the league for defensive actions per 90. In terms of players with the lowest defensive actions per 90 in the league, Koshu was right down there as well. So, that's another element that they're perhaps let's say gaining in the absence of Koshu in that double pivot and the addition of Florentino, although, as we said already, against this Casapia defense, perhaps they needed that more creativity. Albert, it was Roger Schmidt's 100th game, and I saw his the statistics for this. He's out of those 100 games, 72 wins, 17 draws, and 11 losses. And I just wanted to compare that to Amorim, as another example, who in his first 100 games have 73 wins, 15 draws, and 12 losses. So almost identical, really, and sort of another reminder that although we have been very critical of Schmidt on occasion, it's still pretty decent going, for managers and maybe a bit of perspective. They're obviously the only Portuguese team still in Europe as well, so that's yeah, that's another thing that's good. It's yeah, I don't know. I think it's still think Benfica is such an interesting situation, and there's so much. It's a part, it just always feels like more of a drama, doesn't it? Benfica, and maybe that's because there's so many eyes looking at them and so many mouths talking about them, and it's just it's very, I find it very interesting, and yeah, you just got. And can I just say one thing I did want to talk about, Albert, was the Alzness catching the ball. Which,
I only saw this after the fact. I didn't even clock this during the game.
well, I just think it's interesting because it's one of those situations that, we see it quite often from the other side, where if this was against Benfica, there'd be so many replays doing the round, and then, but it we don't perhaps we don't have this, hear as many Casapia fans as outrageous as we would have Benfica fans if it was the other way around. It was just funny. I just quite liked it, and it's something we've seen before other teams do, maybe not getting the right call for them or whatever. But it was a really strange decision for Alves to just catch it like that.
I mean, if you could find a Casapia fan, Barney, I'm sure they would be outraged.
Absolutely, yeah.
On Casapia, though, because they have been in decent form lately. You know, we were speaking on recent podcasts about their upturn in form with a new manager. This was obviously a bigger test than what they've had before. They set up with a very, very defensive 5-4-1 formation, which you have to say ultimately worked because they limited Benfica to few chances and obviously only one goal. They also had their own moments. They had one or two of their own chances to score, although it really was only one or two chances. That's why I think personally that this wasn't necessarily a bad performance from Benfica, although 1-0 away at Casapia might seem like an underwhelming result. I think it was a very, very tough game against a very, very defensive team, which they ultimately controlled the game and won. But how do you feel about the way Casapia set up? And you know, on the one hand, I was thinking they had a great chance to score in the first half, which they didn't take, and maybe if they'd taken that, it would have been 1-1. But really, I think they did what they had to do, but it wasn't particularly a pretty performance from Casapia.
No, but I think that I think that's been proved to be this season the way to play against Benfica is to just frustrate him and the pressure builds, and then you might be able to scrape a draw. I think that's when we've seen teams have success. I think, like we've both said, it's sort of them going back to their tried and tested formation. I think that certainly benefits the decent centre backs they've got. You know, Fernando Varela is obviously a very experienced player, Zolotic as well. I remember praising a lot last season, but the one for me is Shamba, who this season has just looked, just stood out a lot more. Was it a few weeks ago when he made that marauding run? Was it against Vitória where he ran the pitch and should have put it away? But he's also got quite a few man of the match performances recently for his defensive duties, you know. So I think, he's been a good player for them. And of course, you've got the likes of Lelo, left wing back, and Larrazabal, the Spanish right wing back, who's come in and looked good as well. So, yeah, I mean, they needed a bit of stabilizing. And this is quite a stabilizing performance, I'd say. You know, you can take a lot of credit from this. They do have players in there who can make things happen as well. I'm excited to see more of Pablo Roberto. I've always liked him, and he seems to be playing further up the pitch now as well, which is benefiting him. So, yeah, I think they desperately needed it, but it seems to finally come around this sort of positive upturn.
Absolutely. Well, there were similarities to Sporting's game against Benfica for Porto, who played Vizela at home, and also went down 1-0. Early on, although for Porto, it was a bizarre own goal from Pep of all people. But they responded well to the setback. They kept plugging away and turned things around to win 4-1 at home and continue the great run of form that they were on. Admittedly, assisted a little bit by a red card early in the second half.
Yeah, that certainly helped them. it just gave them that bit more space, didn't it, going forward? And Francisco Conceição certainly found that space cutting in on the from the right hand side.
Well, I mean, you know, he found the space, but he also earned the space, Barney, because, you know, it's something that I was going to bring up was, for me, Conceição, once again, best player on the pitch. And important to remember, he got that player sent off. He earned both of those yellow cards. He absolutely had that guy on toast all game. I forgot the name of the Brazilian defender, but you know, it was him, his work that earned that red card.
Well, it was Matheus Lacava, the left midfielder, sort of trying to come back and double up on Conceição and getting those two yellows. So, I mean, yeah, Chico Conceição was just in a real, it's just a lovely moment. And He's just as if he was listening to this podcast, because it was a couple of weeks ago I was saying he needs to start delivering goals and assists, and he's been absolutely on form. It's the team that's did so well and so admirably against Arsenal in Europe. You know, it's a really strong 11 now, a really settled team. Something that we haven't had all season from Conceição, where it's now looking like, you know, this is the 11 to play. And you know, Pepe is Pepe Aquino, the playing in that number 10 role, I think has been a really, I've just been so surprised at how well he's taken to that role. Mm-hmm. And it's not like he's not playing as, you know, he came to Portugal as a right midfielder, but was asked to play right back for quite a lot of parts of the in the last year. And then coming into this number 10 role, not your sort of person to find that killer pass or a person to you know, unlock a defense, but that person to get the ball turned and drive up the pitch and get players forward, push the defense back. It really suits them well, and you know, Galeno and Conceição can get him behind. Evan Nelson's find a real good bit of form as well, a bit more consistency. It's an interesting point of the season for them, isn't it? I think now they're out of Europe as well, it'll be interesting to see how they can focus their energy onto in the league and you know, try and get close to Benfica, because there's a bit of the season left and they could do it.
Well, they ended last season strongly as well after a disappointing start, and they're doing the same again. So it is a kind of recurring theme that we've seen from Porto, and I wonder whether that's part of Sergio Conceição getting his summer frustrations out of the way, perhaps not getting the players he wants, perhaps losing players that he didn't want, getting all of that out of the way and then settling down and then playing to their full potential because, as you say, they really are. I don't want to bang on about Chico Contis out, but I thought another game where he was the best player on the pitch. You know, like you say, got the goal to set his team on the way to the victory. A call up to the Portugal national team this week—that's a great achievement for him. And the thing I always think about Chico Conceição is this time last season he was really struggling at Ajax, and it looked like he'd made a really, really bad choice in his career, and his career was set to go in the wrong direction. And just to think, 12 months later, he's back at Porto, which wasn't necessarily a risk, but looks like a step back. Well, I mean, a call up to the Portugal national team suggests that it was absolutely the right step in his career. So really, yeah, really happy to see that. I mentioned that own goal from Pep Barney. I mean, I'm not just bringing it up because I had two Porto defenders in my fantasy team, and he has absolutely screwed me over with that own goal. A bizarre own goal, like I said, where he if you haven't seen it, essentially he manages to somehow pass the ball into his own net from point blank range. He actually does a really good job of placing it to the side of the goalkeeper because it would have been easier to pass it straight to the goalkeeper. But once I got over that initial frustration, I wondered whether I was the only one who watched that goal and thought it's actually really great work from Samuel Osendé to create the chance, honestly, because he absolutely dominates Otavio in a 1v1 duel from the pretty much the halfway line. Works his way into the Porto half to the edge of the box and manages to deliver a dangerous ball into the box, which they're rewarded with a goal. I mean, I'm talking about Samuel Osendé again, Barney, but I think it's going to be really interesting to see what level he's playing at next season, whether in Portugal or another league abroad.
Are you trying to wrangle it so we're sort of saying it was this is a Samuel Sen consolation goal in
I mean, he deserves an assist.
it? At the very least.
At the very least.
No, he looked, you know, that as you described beautifully, like that is his game. He's able to, you know, put him up against any centre back in this league. He'll give him a really good fight and then probably able to bully them. I think obviously Vizela, once they lost that man, it was going to be really hard for them. They had to sort of see the game out. I don't know how much closer they could have got to it. Still had 11 men on the pitch. You know, Bruno Costa. It was interesting seeing Bruno Costa play because you know it wasn't too long ago he was playing for Porto
That was interesting.
or you know not as frequently as perhaps hoped for him. But yeah, you know, it's one of these ones where we're not going to have too much to say about the losing team, with it? Because, Porto just looks too good, and as I said, my main point is that this 11 for Porto looks pretty dangerous, and you know, had we seen a sort of beginning of the season, you know, they could be in a completely different spot.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's talk about some more football because there are more games that we want to get through before the end of the show. And Braga kept hold of fourth place with a 2-1 win at home over Gil Vicente. Not as straightforward as it could have been. I feel like I've said that exact phrase quite a few times on recent podcasts about Braga. They weren't incredibly convincing, and they did allow Gil Vicente back into the game. But an 88th minute win up from Simon Banza gave them an important 3 points. That man, Barney, has earned them so many points this season with his goals. We saw how much they missed him during the African Cup of Nations. I was left after this game thinking if this game had happened during AFCON while he wasn't there, would Braga have got that second goal to give them the 3 points? I very much doubt it, but he did get them the win at a really crucial time of the season with Vitória breathing down their necks. I just think it's hard to understate how important Simon Banza is for Braga at the moment. And you know, usually we're saying that about Ricardo Horta, but at this point in time, Simon Banza is that man for Braga at the moment.
Yeah, that's a really good point because Ricardo Horta had been so talismanic for them last season, but that wasn't, you know, just goals. That was in chances created, putting penalties away, being that sort of that figure of excellence in a, you know, to give them the belief that they could have a seat at this the top table. And in Banza, like you said, they've got that player this year, and he just does make all the difference. Is it equal goals with Gyökeres as well? So it's a hell of an achievement. I think that's an absolutely perfect point to say that if he was away at AFCON, this wouldn't have turned into a win. He's just so findable, isn't he? Is that the word? It was a great ball in for the winner, and lovely head, and he found that space well. Because like I've just mentioned, Ricardo Horta, he's obviously out at the moment. I'm not sure if he's injured exactly, but that's a sort of big loss to the team. A lot of talk about Braga next season. It feels like that is the sort of the point we've got to. They've sort of reached their ceiling, but we're not really going to see much more for them apart from perhaps holding on to a fourth spot. I can't really see them properly pushing Porto for that third spot anymore. They've certainly lost a bit of momentum, but then in Banza they've got that player who's got a sort of a reason to keep scoring, to sort of really go for that golden boot and then step up.
Yeah, I mean, it's a disappointing situation for Braga to be in, but I completely agree that it's pretty much about securing fourth place. And top four stability is good for Braga, but we're kind of constantly here in hope that they're going to disrupt the big three in a bigger way than what they've been able to do this season. Just quickly on Gil Vicente Barney, do you think they might be kicking themselves a bit after this game? Because perhaps this is with the benefit of hindsight, but I think it was really a game for them, there for the taking. They obviously did well to earn the penalty that they scored. They actually had some late chances of their own. I know Braga are a bigger team. When they look back on this game, I think Gil Vicente might rue those missed opportunities. And that, I think it was very telling that at 1-1, Gil Vicente have a big chance up one end of the pitch. They don't take it, and then it's pretty much Braga go up the other end of the pitch and Bruma puts the ball on the plate for Simon Banza, and it Braga to walk away with all 3 points. But I kind of had left with a feeling that not only could they got a draw out of this game, but on a different day, this could have been a Gil Vicente win as well.
Yeah, well, they've been a bit toothless recently. We saw that in the Monday Night Football where they just weren't really able to create any clear cut chances. There was their moments. They had the wingers making some nice runs, but there was never really any real danger. The thing I've been interested in really is the there was a, when they sort of had their resurgence. They were sort of playing with no out and out striker. They had Felix Correa, Murillo, and oh, I'm gonna forget his name now. Is it Tinjani Chabral? Sorry, but the, you know, but at the point they were playing with like three wingers and the front three, and they were actually looking quite good, and they were getting goals. Ali Alipo sort of come back into the team recently. Obviously, scored the penalty this game, but that just changes the dynamic slightly of that attack. They're not shipping as many goals as they had been, though. I think that's one of the key areas that they needed to address. There's been an improvement in that sense. And they're having a bit of stability to that back line now. They've got sort of settled back four. Buta is a sort of decent left back. Alex Pinto is sort of coming quietly at right back, but had a quite a decent season as well as Gabriel Pereira, who's the Brazilian centre back who was rumoured of Porto at one point before Otavio signed. So, yeah, I mean, they need to get some wins soon. They've had a few draws, and obviously this potential draw turned into a loss. So they still need to get points to steer clear of danger. But I feel they're better placed now than they were a few weeks ago.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about Shavs versus Vittorio Bari. Very tight game between the two teams as former Vittoria manager Moreno faced the side that he left earlier in the season, although both teams now in very different places in the table. It was a fairly close encounter, I thought, for the best part of the game. Both teams had chances to score throughout. Vittoria went 1-0 ahead through Jota Silva, who has coincidentally just been called up to the Portugal national team. Great achievement for him. But Xavi's got themselves an equaliser and almost scored a second immediately after, thanks to defensive mistakes from Vitória. They couldn't capitalise, and Vitória did end the game the stronger team, getting the second goal and winning the game 2-1. It was a good performance at times from Xavi, but performances are not enough for this team at the moment. What they need is points. What they need is wins if they're going to move up the table and get out of the relegation battle, which at the moment they simply are not getting from anywhere.
No, the games are running out for Moreno. It's looking more and more dangerous. They've still got to play Sporting, Porto, and Benfica before the end of the season. Benfica next week. They've just got they've still got to play some teams who would be down there, the likes of Portimão, Vizela, and Estoril. So those would be the games they really have to look at. But Vitória always going to be favourites to this one. Thiago Silva on the score sheet with another coolly slotted home penalty. I feel like I underrate Thiago Silva, but I think he's, I don't know, maybe because he's not young, and I sort of always think of Vitória as being, these up and coming youngsters. Obviously Jota Silva's doing amazing, but yeah, Thiago Silva just seems to be one of these players who's just so, is it clinical? Not clinical, but he's not consistent either. But he's got that X factor, let's say, in that team, and he's got that. He has produced magic at some points this season and scored vital goals. So he's been a really big player for them. And if you're looking at it in that sense as well, arguably sort of that leader on the pitch, that player to sort of to come with that experience and that quality. And yeah, I just think I just haven't rated him enough really, because he's been a really good player.
Well, he's one of those players that we see in Portugal quite a lot, a bit over the hill now, never quite played at the highest level, never been consistent, but has some undeniable quality in there somewhere. And when you get to see it's really impressive. I mentioned Jota Silva and his call up to the national team. I tweeted about this earlier that, I can't remember the last time a player who one has never played for any of the big three at any level, including, youth level, youth team setups or anything like that, has never played for the national team at any youth level, and is currently playing for a Portuguese league team outside of the big three and Braga. He's 24 years old, he's not 18, and he gets called up for the national team. I think it's a really great story. I really do respect Roberto Martinez for that selection. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that, because I think, he's playing really well this season, and I think it's hard to deny that he's not one of the best wingers in the league this season.
Yeah, I think it's. I mean, it's so promising to see that Martinez is looking at this league and giving it the respect it deserves. I think other managers perhaps would have looked at Jota. I think he's had a great season and seems to have grown as the season's progressed. I think Pacheco, Albert, has got a bit to do with it as well, because I was thinking about. I was going to compare it to Kiko Bondozi, a similar a player you could say has got a slightly similar story, although was obviously a bit older than Jota when he came to the top division. But, Pacheco's coached a player like Kiko Bondozi and took him through those levels and ensured he was able to play at the very top. And Jota Silva seems, yeah, far more confident. It felt like, under Moreno, it felt like those wide attackers, playing on with the wing backs either side of them, never really knew how to play, what spaces to come up in, how to, what their roles were. It was obviously different from a, say, being a winger in a 4-3-3. And even in this formation under Pacheco, though, Jota Silva's sort of found his space in the team. He's found his role, you could say, and he's we've seen a much better player in terms of chances and finding space and getting in the right areas and finishing as well. So yeah, really, really happy for him. I love it. I think it's great that Martinez has done it, and it's just a wonderful story. That's why I love football, is these sort of stories about, players getting these moments. So yeah, really happy for him.
Just hope he plays now. Very, very quickly, Barney. Estoril 1, Portimonense 0. Estoril getting a much, much needed win over their Algarve opponents. They won by a solitary goal to nothing. This was their first win in six games, enough to take them out of the relegation zone at the expense of Portimonense, who dropped into 16th place. It was a funny game because, on the one hand, I think both teams should be commended for the chances that they created, but equally, there was a real lack of quality when it came to taking those chances. Estoril took one of theirs. Portimonense, how they have not scored in this game, I do not know. 18 shots they had, plenty of good opportunities. When you're in a relegation battle like Portimonense and Enza are, not taking chances like that in games like this, not getting points when they're there for you, could really make a huge difference.
Yeah, it feels like Estoril finally got that bit of luck. You know, they like, as you said, they really needed the win. Of course, it would be Cassiano popping up with a goal, and it feels like he's that sort of player who will get those odd goals, which could prove to be worth their weight in gold come the end of the season. So great for him. João Basso was man of the match in this game, with a really good performance. I think that's the first time since he's arrived that he's sort of shown. Yeah, what he can bring to this Estoril team. Zanocello, the Brazilian midfielder who they signed from the Brazilian league in January on loan. Sorry, I've forgotten the team, but just he's just another player. I don't know what he looked good in this game, and he's just one of these many Estoril players, midfielders with so much talent. It feels like they just and yeah, you know they are where they are in the league. It's just interesting. But a huge win for them, absolutely massive, and this is big for them. So they need to carry it on for sure.
Well, it's one thing to get wins against Portimonense, but they're going to have to back it up against tougher teams in weeks to come. Very, very quickly, Barney, we don't have time to discuss the game, but I did want to get your thoughts on the news that came out today that Famalicão have sacked manager João Pedro Sousa. He's managed Famalicão on two separate occasions. I already tweeted my thoughts out. I think, a lot is said about the ambition of Famalicão. A lot is said about the fact that I'm not sure the proof of this, but I've heard from different people that say they're basically Portugal's fifth highest funded team, and yet currently they're in ninth place, which sounds good, but they're only 5 points above the relegation zone. And crucially, Barney, they're 22 points behind fifth place Vitória, which is what I think Famalicão really will be aiming for. I asked people whether they thought it was a harsh or fair decision. Most people seem to think it's a fair decision. I agree. I think the issue for me with Famalicão, Barney, is that they don't look like a better team than when João Pedro Sousa came back to the club. In fact, they look worse this season than they did last year. Of course, Simon Banza is a big part of that, but they're getting further away from their goals rather than closer. So I think this was probably inevitable.
Yes, I think the only thing I would say, Albert, is and Banz is the key to this, Albert, is I think he's perhaps been let down in his striking options. It's been a huge issue for them. They've only scored 24 goals this season. Only Casapia has scored less. Everyone else in the league has scored more than that this year. And when you look at it, they had Cadisil there already, who's popped up with a few. Henrique Araújo on loan from Benfica, we all thought was going to be the signing, the player to sort of lead that line, hadn't worked out. So I think in terms of whether it's Pedro Sousa's fault or the squad he was allowed to work with, maybe it's a bit of more of a balance for me. Although he's got to coach those players. So yeah, they needs to make a change. It's as we've been saying all season, they're not safe. And to hear you say it like that, despite being in eighth, they're still 22 points behind fifth. That's that just once again
It's
highlights
crazy.
how volatile this that bottom half and from eighth downwards is, and how it would only take two results and they could be down there. So yeah, things did need to change. But I would maybe not put all the blame onto João Pedro Sousa and perhaps look at their recruitment in the attacking areas.
No, I think that's a very fair point. All right. Well, I think that's all we've got time for on this week's episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast. Me and Barney are about to record our weekly bonus podcast that's exclusive to Long Ball Football Socios, where we'll be previewing all the action from upcoming week of Primeira Liga football. So if you want to listen to that, head over to our Patreon page where the link is in the description of this podcast. Before we go, just to say, as always, thank you for listening. If you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts, a star rating on Spotify, or share the show on your social media with friends, all of that good stuff is very much appreciated. But just leave me to say thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Yes, yeah, see you next week.